Well, thank you all for coming today. Today is a public hearing on the use of electronic voting machines in the state of Colorado. As Secretary of State, I have made it my administration's top priority to restore public confidence in the electoral process. I therefore want to ensure that whatever method is used to conduct elections in this state, whether paper ballot or electronic voting machines, voters are able to vote in an efficient and secure manner, and that the votes are counted in a timely and verifiable way. Across the country, and right now here in Colorado, many concerned citizens and organizations are questioning the effectiveness, the security, and the reliability of electronic voting machines. But others view these machines, known as DREs, as the only way for every voter to vote privately and independently. They emphasize the successes electronic voting machines have had in counties across the country. Current state and federal laws require the presence of at least one electronic voting machine in every polling location. My administration is working to make sure that appropriate security provisions are in place for these machines and that they are certified or recertified, as this case may be, based on those security provisions. Today, I hope to hear from both sides of this issue. I want to hear the genuine concerns of those who oppose the use of electronic voting machines, and I want to hear from those who support their use. I understand that the dialogue has been ongoing and that it will continue after today's meeting, but as Colorado's chief elections officer, I feel compelled to give all concerned voices my ear, listen to their concerns, and take them under advisement as we move forward. So thank you for coming today and for your participation in our electoral process. I would now like to introduce our first presenter, David Boland, Executive Director, Center for People with Disabilities. David.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I appreciate the opportunity to have this forum to give some input. Center for People with Disabilities has been serving people with disabilities in Boulder and Broomfield counties for over 30 years. We are primarily an advocacy organization, and we work closely with the clerk's office for the Boulder County on their choice of a DRE for Boulder County. We also work closely with them to ensure that all the polling sites were accessible. So last year's election, 2006, was the first year that many of our constituents had ever voted independently, privately, and were able to cast their ballot. The first time since they acquired their disability, in many cases the first times in their lives. We take voting for granted, those of us who don't have a mobility impairment or a visual impairment. We don't take other things for granted necessarily. In particular, I'm hard of hearing. I use technology in order to hear people better, as well as visual clues. Many people with disabilities use a lot of different types of technology. Because of the weather today, one of the people I wanted to bring with me to share my speaking time with, a gentleman by the name of Bruce Gogan, who has MS, uses a power wheelchair, has no use of anything below his shoulders, lives with a ventilator 24 hours a day. Without technology, he'd be dead. The use of technology in voting makes just perfect sense. We all use technology throughout our day. Americans use technology for online voting, or online banking. We pay our bills. We order goods and services online. We use our credit cards online. We trust a lot of things that could be hacked into. My money is very important to me, maybe more important than my vote, especially if somebody can get into my bank account and empty it. That would be a real problem as far as I'm concerned. I think that the security measures that can be taken to cover DREs, I think that's something that can easily be done. Because they're not linked to the internet, they're not linked to an intranet, It's one machine at a time would have to be hacked into. Boulder County had over 100 polling sites last year. In order for that, we'd have to have a lot of people going to a lot of places to make a real difference in the way votes are counted. And I just don't think that election judges are not going to see something like that happen. I think with some increased security measures, the DREs are perfectly safe. There are ways of potentially using different machines. You may hear that some people will talk about the AutoMark machine, which we agree with them is very accessible. The unfortunate thing is you can't independently cast your ballot. That is why that they never applied for certification in the state of Colorado. They could not meet Colorado law. I haven't figured out why they couldn't do that. I mean, printing technology is pretty advanced, and using tractor feeds and a number of different things to put into a locked ballot box, I would think that the AutoMark people should have been able to figure that out, but apparently I'm wrong, because they couldn't figure it out. I know that they are working on that, though. But for our community, the disability community, it is very important that we be able to have machines that are accessible for us to use. We need machines that allow us to independently and privately mark our ballots. I have marked ballots for various people that I've worked with and friends who are blind, who couldn't vote on their own. They put a lot of trust in me. I could have marked that ballot any way I wanted. I could do that for a person with a mobility impairment who can't mark their own ballot because they have no use of their hands. What are they going to do? I could mark it my way. And that's the trouble with not having an accessible voting machine, is that you are not able to actually cast, you know, mark your ballot in the way that you want it marked, because you're trusting somebody else, and they may not mark it the way you want it. They may argue with you over your vote. There's a lot of different things that can happen in using that as an accommodation, whereas this year, you know, and the voting machines are not accessible to everyone, we know that, but they're accessible to more people with disabilities than have ever been able to vote independently, and that is the key to our democracy, is our vote. Each one of us gets to vote privately and independently. Without a DRE, people with disabilities don't always have that option. They are then dependent upon someone else to mark their ballot, to cast their ballot, and that's a lot of trust that is very unequal. And so our hope is that we can work with you, the disability community can work with the Secretary of State's office and with those folks who oppose DREs, to come up with an adequate security practice and procedure in place so that we can continue to use these machines, because we will advocate strongly for the continued use of DREs that are accessible for us to be able to vote, so that we have our constitutional right to vote. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Just one follow-up question. In to the best of your knowledge, is the disabled community in Colorado pretty unified behind the position that you just stated? Are there differences within your community?
There are some differences, Mr. Secretary. There are people who believe that everything should be all paper.
Within the disabled community?
Within the disabled community. There are people that are willing to give up their right to privately and independently cast their ballot so that they have a paper ballot. I think that the technology is there to be able to have a paper ballot, and I think it will be by the 2008 election anyway, to be able to have that paper ballot and have it be able to be independently cast. When we had the last election, there was a Channel 9 did a news story on Bruce Gogan, the gentleman that couldn't come, as he was casting his ballot using jelly switches. It was very interesting to see how he did that. Before that, he had his wife helping him vote. Well, they kind of disagreed a lot. And she would argue with him about how he was voting. And I think that that's really the real presence is, within the disability community, there's going to be people who say, we want to be able to have paper ballots so that we can count those ballots. We don't disagree with that. As long as we have an accessible machine so that people with mobility impairments, visual impairments, Parkinson's who are not able to independently cast their ballot, that they can do that. That's our biggest concern. If it's on paper, if it's electronic, that's not our need. We're a group of people that depend on technology. We have to trust technology. We trust it in many cases with our very lives. And because we trust it that much, there's going to be some differences from people who don't use a lot of technology in the disability community to those who use tons. They use it 24 hours a day to stay alive. So those differences are there, just like there's differences within the community of people without disabilities about our DREs, should we trust them, should we have all paper ballots, should we go back to, you know, hammer, chisel, and a stone to mark our ballots, and hand counting. Those are all things that you'll find a disparity of opinion, I think, within the disability community, just like you do within the greater population.
Okay. Mr. Ballin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. Who do we have next? Okay. Harvey Branscombe, did I say it right?
Yes, you did.
Okay, Mr. Branscombe, thank you.
I'm going to attempt a couple of visual aids. Unfortunately, I know that not everyone here can see. Yeah, this is not the machine. This is this machine. Mr. Secretary and gentlemen and ladies from the audience, I'm here representing the Coloradans for Voting Integrity. I'm on the board of directors. I'm a Canvas board member from Eagle County. I live in the unincorporated part of Eagle County between Basalt and Carbondale, which is between Aspen and Glenwood Springs, about 3 hours' drive from here. I also run a small software company which provides a product to enhance the reliability of the Windows operating system, primarily sold in Japan. Participating and discussing elections is not my it's not how I raise any money. It's entirely voluntary on my part, and it takes a lot of time, and it's actually subtracting from my ability to make a living, it turns out. I know there's been a lack of participation by the public in designing and defining election procedures, and I know it's not from a lack of interest. There's a large number of people in Colorado who are extraordinarily motivated and willing to give the time, experts included, who would like to advise the Secretary of State's office and have been trying to do so for some time with limited success. I'm hoping that there's a real danger that the public participation here today will be considered to be somehow sufficient and that there will be no accountability or follow-up on some of the things that we have to say. And I'm hoping and asking for an alternative result, especially considering that you have the opportunity to make a whole new face on the Secretary of State's office. The members of the public who are interested in their elections have been given a great opportunity in your election as Secretary of State, since we've heard that you're committed to follow up with election reforms. Election activists would be smart not to miss this chance for reform. There are good reasons to question our election processes, and even beyond the superficial evidence and the stories which have reached the public consciousness through the press. Sorry. There's a systematic problem with information about elections. Information outside the realm of simple voting results is accidentally and casually, sometimes actually purposefully, blocked. For example, in my serving on the Canvas Board in Eagle County, I wished to provide comments about the post-election audit, the manner in which it was done, and the results which were actually obtained. And there actually is, possibly subsequent to my request, a tiny detailed message on the form, which is provided by the Secretary of State, in reporting the post-election audit, where comments could be provided. And I attempted to provide them, even though my clerk strongly advised not to do so or advised that it would be better just to send in the comments later. I really wanted them to go with the report to the Secretary of State that gets published on the website. But upon looking at the website later, I find that those comments that were made by a member of the Cannabis Board were not included. So that's an example of that kind of blockage. The first step that we need to take is to open up channels of communication and provide for a responsibility to gather and distribute information about the exceptions and surprises, both good and bad, about elections. We need to extend the role of the County Cannabis Board to establish a similar role at the state level and to make sure that information about our elections, not just the results, but the unusual situations encountered along the way are logged and they're analyzed for the purpose of improving the system in the future. There's an impression that the press is performing this function, and that can't possibly be the case. The press is not interested in the nitty-gritty details of elections unless it just happens to be a very exciting, and bloggers are also not the solution to this problem, even though they're making their best attempt. The second step that we need to do is to re-examine our election from an engineering point of view, from basic principles. We need to take into account the human factors of voters and election officials. We've been engaged in retrofitting solutions for the most visible problems without taking a systematic approach to the entire system. And this has been going on for too long. While various technical devices have been added to our repertoire, our toolbox, in some cases having drastic or surprising side effects, DRE happens to be one of these. Voting machines are just one component of the election system, and until recently, they were an optional part of the election system. It's important to remember that equal scrutiny needs to be applied to all of the components. We've got the testing of the voting machines. We've got the national, which has recently come into question. We've got the state testing procedures, which are under review right now in a Rule 45 hearing I've been contributing to. We've got hardware testing, logic and accuracy testing, post-election audit. All of these rules and procedures need review and they need repair. I've had personal experiences with a number of those different tests and found them to be lacking. There's also the ballot design and programming procedures, registration procedures, eligibility checking, procedures for polling place management, including the management of waiting lines, oversight of election officials by canvas boards. Are we dealing with simply a lack of security or hiccups in the relatively unfamiliar DRE machines? Or is Judge Manzanares right about a systematic failure to develop standards and to test against those lacking standards? Are we primarily concerned with the security aspect of voting machines? I think not. Is our concern limited to the recent arrival of the DRE? No. Based on what I found, the accuracy and reliability of optical scanners and various election procedures, I have equal reason to be questioned. Those of you who have control of this system, Mr. Secretary, and the clerk, seem to have a primary vested interest in voter confidence, which you've already mentioned this morning. An easy way to build voter confidence is to keep various election details behind closed doors and buried in bureaucracy. But this doesn't well serve the public interest. Are we concerned about low voter confidence? I'm not concerned about low voter confidence. Voter confidence is not the primary goal of the election system. It's simply a desirable side effect of a well-designed and well-operated election system. I think it's safe to say the public would rather have an accurate voting system than one which simply appears to be accurate. The best election officials are those who admit to their own lack of knowledge, do their best to learn, try to be effective in improving the system, invite the public to participate in the process, and accept the eventual likelihood of moving on to another job. We still often hear the phrase, the voting system performed perfectly, no problems found. Unfortunately, this does not necessarily mean the voting system was accurate or that it interpreted votes properly. It usually means that there was minimum negative feedback from the voters or from the press. And one reason for that is probably the voters themselves don't have feedback about whether their particular vote counted, unlike what they get from an ATM machine, where they may get a specific amount of money in return and a receipt. There's a general need for prioritization of election goals. Election rules, by the time they're being looked up in a book, are probably going to be taken literally, and therefore they need to have intelligence built in to allow for a less perfect backup system to take over in case of a major problem, like we've seen here in Denver recently. Unless we're willing to set a rain date for a problem elections, which certainly is not the choice that's been taken recently. Attracting eligible voters to the polls long enough to vote and the accuracy of the interpretation and counting of that vote are the highest goals on my list. So what I've talked about so far are information flow, redesign of the election system from basic principles, work for reality over appearances, and rules giving priority to accuracy and enfranchisement. And I know, I'm sorry, I know that this discussion should be about the DRE, but I felt it important to mention those general principles because they aren't often mentioned. It's a kind of global view down on the election system from a public point of view, and I felt it very important to mention that. But I'd like to comment about the DRE specifically now. The DRE, in its favor, it supports multi-language well. It's good for better readability on the screen, perhaps not on the VVPAT. It's probably better formatted for clarity, but less able for random access and quick overview and verification. The DRE may allow adequate auditing if special procedures are followed. For example, Paul Walmsley has proposed a method by which specific VVPATs or specific ballots are compared, all of the votes on those are compared to specific guest vote records. And having matched a random set of those, then all of the cast vote records are tallied independently of the voting machine and compared with the overall tally. But not all voting machines can actually have that audit procedure run on them. It's very important that the voter actually verifies, and some disabled cannot verify with the current systems. And there's a report by Noel Runyon that apparently came out yesterday, which I think Carrie Lackland's going to mention. There's the VVPAT is essential for auditability, but not every machine in Colorado has it. The directly marked paper provides a more credible audit if it's properly counted. There's a, I'm going to try to get my screen to function, which may be possible. There's a, that doesn't look like it. I'm just going to show my screen here. This is going to be a little bit difficult to see, but there's a, this is a photo of a, I've got some examples of strange cases of paper ballots here. This is a case where a transfer of toner actually drew a line through the oval here. And this one is a case where there's a fold next to a ballot oval, which actually sometimes causes the vote to appear when it shouldn't be there.
Mr. Branscombe, let me ask you a few questions.
Sure.
Because we're running a little short on time, and that is, on the, is it your view that the electronic voting machines that we cannot make them secure and accurate, and therefore should go to paper ballots, or is it your view that they can be made accurate or secure? There's not a problem. You certainly have stated some problems, but. If you could summarize for me, how would you come down on this issue?
Sure, I'll just take my concluding statement from here. The arguments boil down to the following. The DRE interface provides opportunities for special needs voters, but it adds cost, complexity, and reduces transparency and reliability and confidence in the auditability. For an equal amount of funds and time applied in testing and auditing, the resulting confidence in the DRE is substantially less than that for the paper system. So voters now have a right to vote on an enhanced system such as DRE by federal law, but we have no right to vote on a paper ballot. So to appear at the polls to vote on paper is still the best way for any voter to be sure their vote will be counted properly. And that's because the you need to be there to see that your vote hasn't been moved somewhere else. You need to know that the physical representation of your vote has actually been kept by the election officials, and you need to know that the machine that actually interpreted your vote has interpreted correctly and hasn't rejected your ballot on the basis of some problem. And so there's a That's the reason why it's better to be at the polls instead of to send in a paper ballot by absentee methods. If there are no paper ballots at the polls, there's a great danger of encountering a line of unacceptable length, and that did happen in my county, in my polling place, in this election. I have the names of people who actually walked away from the polls because even though paper ballots were present at the polls, they were not being given out in sufficient numbers in order to cause the line to be reduced to a reasonable
length. What county is this again?
Eagle County.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. You said it earlier.
Well, since I'm not going to be able to get through all of my details, I'm going to give you the my paper report here. But let me just finish these other two sentences. The two systems together, that's the paper and the electronic, benefit the largest number of voters and have the side benefit of providing a valuable cross-check. Traditional paper ballots plus a DRE, which marks anonymous paper ballots to be counted by an optical scanner or hand counting process. And I think that's more conventionally called a ballot marking device instead of a DRE, BMD. And when the results are sufficiently close, the hand counting process used, that's the best of both worlds, and that configuration is acceptable to a wide range of voting evangelists. Now that the voting machines are no longer optional, it's time for the voters of Colorado to receive the right to vote on paper ballots, as well as to vote with some kind of electronic assistance. So that's my
Let me follow up with a question then. You would support a system that would provide an option for voters at the poll, or do you think that that's still problematic? In other words, the option would be, and some counties do this, I know, where they have paper ballots available, and people have an option of voting electronically or on paper.
And in our county, our county clerk provided that not as an option. Specifically, she said it was at her discretion that the paper ballots were present at the polls, and they were released on an ad hoc basis, based on a decision by the election judges there. But the election judges were instructed that there would not be any paper ballots at the polls in the future, and that therefore we should not be freely giving out the paper ballots, that the voters need to learn how to vote electronic. And the result of that was that the huge lines developed in some polling places, in spite of poll watchers actually begging for the paper ballots to be handed out. And in the end, we had our poll watchers actually made a deal whereby if the poll watchers left the polls, more spaces to vote on paper would be made available. And that was the final method by which we were able to increase the number of places to vote on paper from 4 to 9 at the end, which caused the lines at the polls to reduce. And the last voter voted 45 minutes after 7 o'clock, which means the line was about 30 minutes long by the time. But at 5 o'clock, they were 75 people waiting in line for a ballot that takes 10 to 15 minutes to vote, unless you're disabled, in which case it may take considerably longer, such as 45 minutes in my. So that's the issue. It's terribly important to me. Everybody that I've talked to in the Coloradans for Voting Integrity believes that paper ballots are essential. Some believe that they should be the only method of voting. I personally don't believe that. There's some who believe that that the DRE, which doesn't produce a direct, it doesn't produce a similar paper ballot. The result of the VVPAT is not referred to as a ballot in the rules. I think it ought to be, if it was the ballot, and if that ballot was then counted by the same mechanism that counts the voters who vote directly on paper, the Coloradans for Voting Integrity would be satisfied with that. Mm-hmm. And I think there are members from both political parties. There's general agreement about that.
Okay. I mean, verifiable paper audit trail, does that, in your mind, improve the system to where electronic voting then is practical?
It's not sufficient because the way the VVPAT is done is not really ideal. An example of that is right here on this photo. This is a picture of the HART system with the screen at the point at which you're verifying the VVPAT. On the left, you'll see the bright screen with the election choices on it, and on the right side, you'll see the VVPAT. I'm sorry, it's on the right side of the screen. On the left side, the VVPAT. The VVPAT is hard to read. It's small. It's under glass. You can see from this photograph, it's almost impossible to read it. But the screen's very easy to read. It's very distracting. And the voter's likely to verify the screen, not the paper. The paper is what needs to be verified. And so there's a lot of work to be done to turn this VVPAT into something that's adequate to guarantee the the correct interpretation of the voter's intention. The digital record is not that. That's the problem.
Okay. Well, Mr. Braxton, thank you so much for your testimony today.
Thank you.
Very well. Natalie Orell. Natalie Orell from Rocky Mountain Guide Dog Association.
Yeah, Rocky Mountain Guide Dog Association.
Okay.
Okay, can everybody hear me all right? All right. I am a strong proponent both for myself and as a member of the affiliate Rocky Mountain Guide Dog Users for any kind of electronic voting voting system that we can propose. If we have to do a mail-in ballot, I would propose that people have the option for a compact disc or a CD-ROM or an electronic voting machine at every polling place. Because even though I may see a piece of paper and I, you know, somebody may tell me that this is my ballot, to me, because I can't see the piece of paper, it's blank. Any piece of paper might look the same. So I might not be able to tell if that's a voting ballot or my receipt from Einstein's or something like this. And the other thing is that even though I've had reader scribes mark my ballot, I can trust that they're marking the ballot. But can I trust that they're marking it right in the way that I want it to be marked? No, not really. You know, it could be so easy for somebody to say, oh, well, you know, she can't see it, so, you know, she might vote yes on this issue. I'll just mark it no, and, you know, she would never know the difference. So, you know, but if I had a DRE or an electronic voting machine, I wouldn't have to deal with that. I could learn how to use the voting machine through a, you know, through an orientation before the election, and then I could go in and mark my choices as I wish, and I can make sure that they're being done right. But, you know, if we do have mail-in, please consider HTML or computer disks for those who have computer access. If a person doesn't have computer access, then maybe a phone system or something of that equivalent, or an election official who, you know, who is well-versed in the issues and who respects people's rights, you know, to read the thing to them is okay. But, you know, just like with paper ballots, you know, machines have their fallbacks too. But I would rather have a lot more independence and a lot more control as per my rights in the United States Constitution to be able to express my mind in the way that I'm thinking it, as opposed to having somebody do it for me. And let's see. If there's, you know, so it's just something that I would like to see you guys think about that, you know. I mean, just think if you have a piece of paper, and, you know, several blank pieces of paper, and you don't know if it's a, if it's your receipt from the bookstore or from Einstein's or a ballot or just a piece of paper to write something on. Or even worse yet, if you are in a state where you can't speak for yourself, maybe you're dying or something, and you didn't have your living will or all your affairs up to par, somebody's got to make that decision for you, as was the case with Terry Schiavo and Karen Ann Quinlan and that whole big right to life thing. If I can't vote for myself in an accessible format, I'm having to resort to have somebody speak my mind for me, and that's not right. Nobody, just because you can't see something doesn't mean that you can't think it. And so I strongly recommend that you guys really in part the electronic system. Paper ballots do have their place for people who don't have computer access, but for those who do, please do consider the machines. Get people to be trained who are very well versed in the issue so that people can be oriented so that they can go cast their votes on their own just as the general public does. And I'll take the floor for questions.
Okay. Natalie, thank you so much for your testimony today. Was this last election the first time you were able to vote independently, or were you able to vote independently prior to that?
I have never really been able to vote independently. I've had to have people read my ballot, and sometimes, you know, those who were impatient and rushed for time would tell me, well, vote yes on this or vote no on this, you know, even if I had, you know, read my stuff. You know, sometimes these ballots, as you probably all know, they're so worded so crazy, and you need to think about, you know, what it is that you're going to answer before you vote on it.
Did you vote on a DRE in the last election?
No, it was absentee.
Okay.
I think DREs should be posted in every district, because I don't even know where there are any, and I think it needs to be communicated to the people via listservs or newspapers or whatever form of media is out there where there are DREs.
Okay. Well, Natalie, thanks so much for your testimony, and thanks so much for coming down today.
It's always a pleasure for me to come and testify on this very important issue of civil rights and First Amendment rights.
Thank you very much. Let's see, Claudia Coons, is it, if I'm saying that right? And you're with, you're the executive director of the Public Integrity Project?
That's correct.
Thank you.
I was the chief investigator for the Conray versus Dennis voting machine lawsuit, and as a result of that, I have actually been through a lot of public documents, as well as a lot of documents that have been published scientifically with regard to DREs. One of the things is that elections should be accurate, accessible, secure, anonymous, and verifiable. And voting equipment should be accurate, accessible, secure, and reliable. Direct recording electronic voting machines, or DREs, have been shown to be insecure, inaccurate, only partially accessible, and unreliable. The testing and certification process is flawed and has allowed DREs to be certified and used in this country's most sacred process, voting. So I'm going to break this down into several different categories. Security. Under the current system of certification, independent testing authorities are paid by various voting machine vendors to test and certify their equipment. The test results are kept secret from the public. When the ITA reports have been given even limited public scrutiny, they have shown that many of the needed tests have not been performed and the testing process has not been documented. The ITA reports have failed to find security problems that have been later found in testing done by individual states. One of the most notable of these reports is the CompuWare report done by the state of Ohio in 2003, which showed serious security vulnerabilities in the DREs of Hardiner Civic, Diebold, Sequoia, and ESNS. Princeton University has found security flaws in both Diebold and Sequoia machines. The latest one was just the Sequoia one that just came out, that information over the weekend. Recent elections in Colorado have shown that security is a problem. In the November 2006 election, the Sequoia Edge 2 machines that are used in both Denver and Arapahoe County had a serious vulnerability because they had to be operated in the manual mode because the card activator component of these machines, which was, I know in Denver County those were purchased used from Cook County, Illinois, where they didn't work there and they didn't work here either. And this is based on my conversations with various election workers, including technical support staff and election judges. So what happened was, it's called the yellow button hack, and so Sequoia's response to that was to accuse election activists of, and actually contacted at least two county clerks' offices saying, you know, you have to be careful because the election activists are going to try to hack the machines, which is, we're trying to keep machines from being hacked. Why would anyone do that? So, you know, Sequoia, in order to make up for their shortcomings, was trying to accuse election integrity activists that they were going to be doing something. In La Plata County, there were problems with flimsy seals, which allowed the Diebold machines to, with vulnerable interpreted code, to be open to hacking. In fact, in some of these machines, a Princeton study found that they could be, the locks could be picked in under 10 seconds, and then it only takes a couple of minutes to insert malicious code into those machines. And when there are long lines and other lack of security issues, makes those kinds of things extremely important to be looking at. In fact, we should not rely on the human element for security, the machine, and I believe that these machines can never be made secure. I think that's really the bottom line. Accessibility. I want to talk a little bit about Noel Runyon's report that just was published yesterday. This is something he's been working on for 3 years. It was just published, and I believe someone else is actually going to submit that report into testimony today. And one of the things that he talks about is that we need to have a blended system which allows for all different kinds of disabilities. Currently, the systems that were previously certified in the state of Colorado will not meet the what will probably be in law in 2008 in Colorado, because there's legislation right now which will be amending the time frames. And it requires that people not only be able to vote independently and without assistance, but they must be able to verify their vote independently and without assistance. The DREs do not allow people with visual impairments and also people with mobility problems to be able to verify their vote. The machines give a voice back, playback kind of thing when a person pushes a button that simply tells them what button they've pushed, but it does not tell them what's actually on the paper after the vote has been cast. I think that's a very serious shortcoming with the DREs. There are other accessible devices. In fact, DREs are not required by HAVA or by Colorado law. What is required is an accessible device, and there are several accessible devices that are out there that would make things much better for persons with disabilities. The AutoMark is one of them, and my understanding is that that device actually ejects ballots into a privacy sleeve now, so that that could be looked at as casting the ballot independently, and then it could be carried over to a scanner without being able to be viewed by another person. Accuracy and reliability is one of the worst problems with DREs. In fact, there was a study done, the Election Sciences Institute performed a study of the 2006 primary election in Cuyahoga County, Ohio, and that study showed that there were large discrepancies between the vote that was recorded electronically and the vote that was recorded on the VPATs. And after a primary count, 15% of the VPATs required a secondary count. 16.9% of the VPATs showed a discrepancy of 1 to 5 votes between the tally of votes report, and 2.1% showed a discrepancy of over 25 votes in a very close election, and that is simply not acceptable. It's not acceptable anyway, but particularly in terms of a close election. There's some other information about that, which I'm trying to get through this fairly quickly, so anyone who wants my written remarks, I'll have those available on the table. There are a number of other studies that show that the VPATs simply are not reliable. There's a study at Caltech MIT that also shows that they are not reliable. And here in Colorado, there were problems with the VPATs, paper jams. In fact, one election judge told me, she said, the paper jammed and that paper just folded up like a fan. Now, if that's to be the record of the vote in case of recounts and audits, that's hardly acceptable. And there also, I talked to voters who, in fact, Andrew Romanoff's vote was not correctly recorded on the VPAT in the primary election in August. And I had another person report to me that when she voted, it just printed gibberish on the VPAT. How do you audit with that kind of a system if that's supposed to be the official record in terms of a recount? We had reports of at least 3 different brands of machines flipping votes,
If I could ask you one quick question.
Yeah.
How do we know that Representative Romanoff's vote was not recorded properly in the primary?
It was reported in the Denver Post.
Okay. I thought there was privacy. Okay, go ahead.
Well, you know, being in the Denver Post, I suspect it's a matter of public record, so. So we have reports of vote flipping historically in Jefferson County, not just in 2006, but also in previous elections on the ESNS machines. Last week, I just had a report of vote flipping on HART machines in Boulder County, and we also have reports of vote flipping on the Sequoia machines in Denver County. And that says that there's not something going on correctly with the software in those machines, which we're not allowed to see and understand, which is a very bad problem. Verifiability. Because of the inaccuracies of the VPATs, elections using this technology are not verifiable. Colorado statute requires that voting equipment count votes accurately. This is obviously not the case with these. Election judges report that preparation of abstracts must be posted to the polling sites at the end of the day and are extremely difficult to prepare, as the printing of the VPATs is difficult to read, and then they have to transcribe that off and manually put it onto reports that are posted. And so I think that, you know, given the fact, I've actually checked the Secretary of State's website and the audit reports that were submitted by the various counties, and for some reason, all of those exactly match. Given all the studies that are out there and what I know about the lack of performance of the VPATs, I find that to be unlikely to be true. Either that or our audit system is grossly inadequate. Actually, I believe both of those to be true, quite frankly. One of the other things, too, is that I know that Glenn Newkirk, who is on the Secretary of State's panel in terms of drafting Rule 45, has said publicly that the VPATs are unreliable. There are some other issues. DREs pose some issues with regard to anonymous voting, particularly when there are a small number of machines in any polling place or a small number of people who are voting on them. For example, in Broomfield County, of approximately 8,000 people who voted in the general election, approximately 200 used the DREs in the November 2006 election because they had the option of paper. In order to regain confidence of voters in Colorado, we must return to paper ballots. We may need to use blended systems. But if we continue with the DREs and we continue with trying to audit on something that looks like this that can be dropped and thrown across the room, we simply are not going to have elections that mean anything. And so I think it's time that these machines not be recertified and then we stop throwing good money after bad. And I think my time is probably up, and I appreciate all this.
Thank you much for your. I just hate to go back to this. How did Representative Romanoff know that his vote was not recorded properly?
I assume that he looked at the VPAT because he would have voted on one of the Sequoia Edge 2 machines.
Okay, I'll certainly talk to him about that. That's,
Yeah, and in fact, the other thing, too, I was looking at this Diebold machine that's over here, and if you look on the VPAT, it's covered up with this little door, so it's not really obvious that where a person would look to even try to verify their vote. I think that's a serious design problem,
mm-hmm.
among other things.
Okay. So your belief in this is that there's simply no way to make electronic voting really secure, and able to accurately count every vote, and your solution is paper, and in that scenario, do you believe in optical scanners to count the votes ultimately?
Well, in theory, I do not believe in optical scanners because I think that they also are very subject to hacking, and there are various scientific studies that also show that. However, politically, I don't believe that the state of Colorado may be ready to go with hand-counted ballots, although I think that's the best solution ultimately. And I think that ballots should all be counted probably by two methods, so that we automatically are checking all of these things as we go through. I think paper ballots with assistive devices for people with disabilities, I think, is the best way to go.
Okay. Thank you so much. Okay. Steve Marino, County Clerk and Recorder for Weld County.
Good morning, everyone. For the record, once again, my name is Steve Marino, Weld County Clerk and Recorder. I first, again, would like to thank Secretary Kaufman for hosting the open discussion on electronic voting machines. Thank you, Mr. Kaufman. As one of the 64 County Clerk and Recorders of the state of Colorado, I am responsible for the conduction of elections in my county. I have worked for two counties in the state for a total of 22-plus years. I am now serving a second term as Clerk and Recorder. To my point about this is that I've had an opportunity to see a lot of changes concerning voting equipment, from the lever machines, the punch card, to optical scan, to today's DREs, the direct recording electronic machines. And as technology has changed, so has the way we cast our ballot. And regardless of the equipment used to count your vote, it is still the responsibility of the county clerk, election staff, neighbors who serve as election judges, poll watchers, to maintain the fair and secure elections. That's something that's demanded here from everyone in the state of Colorado and every election, and that's the way I feel about that. The first thing to keep in mind, again, is about these DREs, that this was part of that federal mandate that we help out the voters, make sure that they have some independency from what happened in the 2000 presidential election. This came out of it. The DREs you heard earlier about how the voters now have the opportunity to vote independently. If they need to use an audio ballot, they can use that from the DREs. If they have no eyesight, if they are a visually impaired a voter, just a partial visual impairment, voters actually can, with the voting equipment we're using, enlarge the text so they can read the ballot with ease. There, some of these ballots with the font size and everything that's on the ballot, the information, it's pretty hard to read even with 20/20 eyesight. In Weld County, for the record, we actually had 14 DREs in 1999 in our early voting site, and you can actually say with the DREs, we're using these before the birth or even the twinkle of the Havilah, so we've had some experience with the DREs. In my county, it has taken some time to educate the voters and to build that trust in the voting equipment. But the majority of the voters in Weld County, they're very pleased with the DREs that we're using. In 2005, we actually went to a vote center concept, something that the nation's actually looking at, and here in Colorado, you've seen a lot more of that, the vote center concept. And with that, with only having 14 DREs, I was unable to provide DREs in our early vote sites because we increased our early vote sites from 2 sites to 5 sites. So we went strictly with the paper ballot. And for the record, I heard an outcry from the voters that were used to using these DREs in the 2004 presidential election. We had over 10,000 voters that used our DREs, and several of them were calling and complaining to me why they did not have that availability to use that technology. They're very pleased with those DREs. The thing with the DREs, again, it was stated earlier about the multiple languages. This is something that for future elections at the state of Colorado in several of our counties, we have to start to think about. In my county alone, and I know my neighboring county in Adams County, that with census in 2010, it's a strong possibility we're going to become a bilingual county where we're going to have a multiple a ballot language there, so we'll have to use a Spanish ballot. And having all those different ballots, it becomes more and more complex in getting the ballot to the voters there. So with DREs, it would be a much easier transition to be able to use the multiple languages. I believe in California, they have like 9 different languages, and that's why they use these DREs. The most commonly asked question that I'm asked about these DREs is, do these have a paper trail? And the answer then, for the record, is yes, these do have a paper trail. Any new purchase of DREs, we have to have the VPAT, and again, that's the verbal paper audit trail. The other question that's asked of me is, are these connected to the internet? Again, for the record, no, these are not connected to the internet. It was stated earlier. These are independent voting machines. I know it's stated how you can hack into these machines there, but that's where the election judges are the sergeant of arms of these precincts or vote centers to make sure that we don't have anybody tampering with the machines. The list of things that we do before an election concerning the voting equipment, the first thing to keep in mind about operating the voting equipment here is that their state certified voting equipment, and it's also been federally certified, the equipment, and we have a list of security measures and procedures that all of us have to to follow here in the state. Examples of some of the things that we have to do now is we have to have security cameras to monitor the equipment and the personnel that are handling the equipment of any testing or the movement of anything with the voting equipment there. The staff that handle these DREs, they have to go through a CBI background check, the Colorado Bureau of Investigation. And this is not something that we just do every fourth year or every other year. This is something we do every year to make sure we have people with integrity and honesty that are running the elections and touching these machines. We have part of that security there with logs and seals of the equipment to verify our chain of custody from our hands to the election judges when we set these out to the polls and to the voters. The LATs, logic and accuracy testing, this is done by staff. This is also done by party representatives. It's also open to the public. We have to advertise that to let them know well in advance that we're as transparent as we can. You're welcome to come and observe. You can't come and to tamper with the process. I know people would like to have access to go in to touch the machines and everything. Well, if they want to be part of the process, they have to sign up and become the party rep or whoever they are to be part of the process. We welcome that. The post-election audits is probably the most important thing, I guess, to emphasize once again. The counties have no idea which machines are going to be selected for this post-election audit. That's up to the Secretary of State's office. They're going to pick 5% of the voting equipment that's used in any given election. And we have to manually go through and count it. As you saw the paper roll out there, we have to do a manual count from the VPAT to the reports that come out of the electronic voting of the report to make sure that everything is matching correctly, that we have an accurate voting machine. The last thing here, I guess the most important thing to remember is the reality of a vote cast is the honesty and the integrity of all that are involved in the process. And again, in my humble opinion, with the layers of checks and balances that we have concerning our voting equipment here in Colorado, I personally have all the confidence in the world that the elections here in Colorado are fair and secure. Thank you, Mr. Coppin.
Thank you very much. Neil McClure, Vice President, Election Solutions Group, Hart, InterCivic. If I said all that right?
Close enough.
Okay.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak, Mr. Secretary. I was here, I believe, a week ago and provided some testimony and input for the committee that is working on the new rule for the state. And through that testimony, I provided several suggestions or recommendations that we believe could be implemented to improve voter confidence in elections. And one of those elements addressed reliability, and Hart believes that that's an area that has largely been unaddressed by some of the previous standards. As early as 1999, we've recognized that quality and reliability are a cornerstone of voting systems, which is why we pursued the ISO 9000 certification process, which requires us to be audited on a quarterly basis to ensure that our processes and our development environment are following rigorous standards to produce repeatable, reliable equipment. We've also done extensive testing on our product to test the end of life and have spent a lot of time and energy in ensuring the quality, reliability of our system. Now, prior to And I acknowledge one of the problems with the electronic voting industry, of course it's all the other vendors, not us, is the reliability of their equipment. And there are certain things that I believe that we can do as an industry to require changes in processes, require additional testing for the electronic systems to not only increase voter confidence, but also to prove out the machine's ability to conduct large, complicated elections. I've provided that in my previous testimony and in written comment form. But I would agree that is something that the election industry needs to be addressed. You know, prior to 2000, it was a pretty quiet industry, and with the advent of the 2000 presidential election with the Florida activity. You know, that changed everything. It changed the nature of the industry. A whole bunch of new people got involved and became interested. You know, a lot of times people say to me, well, that must have been a real boom for your company, and I come back and say, well, all the Y2K consultants needed someplace to go. So it brought a whole new group of people that, you know, were generally interested in improving the election process. It also brought a whole bunch of new requirements. As a manufacturer, designer, and developer of these systems, I can tell you it's been very, very difficult to keep pace with and continue to maintain a level of quality and reliability of the system. That notwithstanding, we have very rigorous test requirements as part of production that ensure that our system will work as intended. We continue to be involved in various standards meetings, discussions at state and national level to work with the community to improve standards for the voting systems. We ourselves invested in a very comprehensive security program at our facility where we brought in some of the industry expert security consultants and added a complete layer of security to our product. Our product was designed to always support that, but prior to 2000, that was never a customer requirement or a public requirement. It became very visible, and our system is noticeably different than the other popular electronic systems, and those design decisions were based on security and reliability. Touchscreens, in our opinion, are not reliable for a long period of time. There are challenges with calibration, which is why we chose a user interface and other components so that no calibration is ever required. And so that's a very important functional aspect for a reliable system. So we've made those decisions. We've invested in security. And one of the challenges that we've been faced is there's nobody to look at our security. There's no federal level or state level of sufficient expertise or knowledge and background in the various security aspects that are part of the voting system to actually review it and provide a report that says, yes, the security of this system is adequate. And probably the biggest challenge for the industry is everybody's talking about security, but security remains an art, and the only way to really implement security and assess security is in the face of a threat model. I mean, we're talking about hacking, you know, that's possible to hack into these systems. Well, what you also need to talk about is the likelihood of its occurrence, not only happening successfully, but also without discovery. And so we don't talk about these in these conversations about, oh, it's possible to hack something. As I reminded the audience in my previous testimony, it's also possible for a voting system to be struck by a meteorite. But, you know, that's very unlikely, so we don't put those kinds of requirements on it. So a threat model is extremely important to establish and adopt as what are the likely threats, the possible threats to a voting system, which ones are likely to have a outcome that actually changes the results of an election without being detected. There's other concerns about, a lot of talk has been going on about verifiability. And largely electronic systems, I believe, are held to an absolute standard, and that there really isn't a treatment of paper systems or other methods on an equal playing field. Prior to 2000, if you talk to general public and certain concerned citizens, they would admit that paper elections have been stolen or subverted, whether proven or not. I think that voter confidence that existed for paper, you can actually find a segment of the population that would believe that. But now we're talking about paper as a secure media, when in reality it has equal levels of challenge that electronic piece paper does, or electronic systems do. So this again is really can be addressed through the threat model and compared against that on an equal playing field. I mean,
if I could just ask you a question. You talked about that there was really no adequate method for determining the security of these machines. So in your view, the federal and state certification processes don't really address the security issues?
Well, they have addressed it historically in the fact that they require it. So as part of that, when we submit our system for the national, the ITA certification, they review the security of the system, but it's not done against a documented standard that is part of, say, the old NASED standards. NIST is working on a open-ended vulnerability model that would review systems against. I mean, we had to develop our own threat model, which we believe is appropriate for the election market, and then develop the security to mitigate those threats. Now, are we in a position to share that threat model with the public and have it reviewed for adequacy? The vendors have really been excluded from the table other than through written comment about developing new standards. There's some belief that we're evil and committing felons and that we can't be trusted because we're forced to pay for our own testing. Believe me, we would love nothing more than to not have to pay the hundreds of thousands of dollars that it costs to test these equipment, but we're forced into it in order to stay in this as a business. So we haven't been in a position to actually share this information with the public and have it have a positive effect.
Is that because it's proprietary from a business standpoint, or is that because this maintaining security?
Well, I think it's largely because we developed it.
Okay, proprietary. Okay.
Well, no, I'm not saying it's proprietary. I'm saying that it wouldn't be given credibility because it came from us. Just as people don't trust the fact that we submit our systems to an independent test lab because we're paying them to conduct the test. It's the same kind of rhetoric.
Okay.
So the reality is any system is susceptible. There's no such thing as a perfect system. In fact, any voting system that prints a report is susceptible to fraud, and the security models and the threat models need to be developed to address those situations for all systems, and that paper should not be regarded as a secure medium.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your testimony today and sharing
okay.
with us.
Thank you
very much. Do you want to go right into public testimony?
Yeah, let's just get the
mic. Okay, if we can head right into public testimony, and if our presenters could be brief to give everybody an opportunity, I would deeply appreciate it. Diane McGeorge? Is Diane here? Okay. Diane McGeorge, National Federation of the Blind, okay.
Thank you. Good morning. I was warned there was a lot of stuff on the floor, and there is a lot of stuff on the floor. But that's fine. It's good to have a good turnout here today. Mr. Secretary, thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to come and speak at this public hearing. This is indeed a matter of great import to all of the citizens in the United States, and certainly to the citizens here in Colorado. And we applaud you for making this a priority to be sure that we do have a good, secure voting system. As a member of the National Federation of the Blind, I am really not here to speak for or against any specific method of voting. The National Federation of the Blind worked very closely with Senator Chris Dodd while HAVA was being written, and we assured with Senator Dodd that one of the key issues in that legislation needed to be that there would be non-visual access to voting. That was passed and enacted, and now we, for the first time in our lives, can cast a secret and independent ballot. That is the right we want to have protected, no matter what system is adopted. The right to cast a secret, independent, private ballot is one which Americans have had since voting was enacted so that everyone could vote. But we, as blind and visually impaired people, have only recently gained that right, and that was in 2006. Let me just quickly share with you my personal experience. I have voted in every election since I was old enough to vote, but never was able to cast an independent secret ballot. I had assistance from election judges. Sometimes I would do an absentee ballot and ask a friend to mark the ballot for me. I honestly did not think a whole lot about the trust issues. Maybe that's because I'm basically not a distrustful person, but of course the trust issues exist. However, in 2006, for the first time in my entire adult life, I went down here and I voted independently using the electronic voting machine. It was not difficult to use. It was easy. I could push a button then to listen to what vote had been cast to be sure that I had done it correctly. I was more worried about me than I was the machine. Wanted to be sure I did it right. At any rate, that is a right and that we should not lose. I know that you, in your determinations and those folks who help you make those determinations, have no intent of taking away the rights of any individuals to cast a private and a secret ballot. If, in fact, the mail-in ballot does become the law in this state, there definitely needs to be what I'm hearing termed this morning a blended system, which is a very accurate term. We need to be able, either through computer access, through phone access. You know, I'm not here to invent the access. That's not my job. But I know it's doable. I know it's doable. I'm here as a member of the NFB who has always been in the forefront of consumer advocacy to state we must be sure that our right to a secret ballot is not taken away. We've worked too many years to get it. I thank you for this chance to speak. I know you're asking people to be brief. I'm good at that. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Diane. Jeff Cook, Honest Elections, is that .us?
Yes.
Okay.
Hello, my name is Jeff Cook. I'm with Honest Elections US. I'm a professional computer programmer. I was one of the people who warned Denver about the upcoming problems in last April, and unfortunately they did happen. First, just want to mention one thing. I keep on hearing these things about HAVA requiring electronic voting devices. Oh, Matt, you did not mention that, but I don't know what law requires any electronic voting devices. HAVA certainly does not. It does require handicapped access, but not electronic devices. So, just going through basic conclusions, not doing many details here. As far as DRA is concerned, DRA is not the only problem. We also need to look at the central tabulators. That is a great source of concern and problems. Throughout this process, we've seen many decisions made throughout the years, but very few have really consulted with independent computer programmers. We're talking about using computers, but we're not talking to the people who know the computers inside and out. I've heard statements made here today that computer programmers would just say that that's not true. Professional trust. I do not know a single professional computer programmer who would trust a DRE. Anyone who studied the issue, they go, this just can't be done. I know people who do high-level security on computers, and they do not trust DREs. Can they be made safe? Presently, I see no way of doing it. I've been studying it for years. I came into this thinking we could use computers. The more I study it, the more I do not trust them. Accurate? No. Independent tests show that, real-world examples show that electronic voting is not accurate. Other voting systems had problems? Yes. We need to solve the accuracy all the way around. Failing? Yes, they're failing all around the country. Many counties, we've seen here in Colorado, computers are also showing they're not necessarily fast accounting. Chicago took a couple of weeks. Look how long it took Denver to get the results. Other countries are using small batch, emphasizing a term, small batch hand-counted paper ballots, and they're getting results in 4 hours. Error detecting, there is no electronic system right now that has any built-in error detecting. The errors are caught by happenstance. People just happen to notice something weird. Testing we're doing in Colorado is completely inaccurate. If you had a machine that's miscounting 1 in 200 ballots, that's a big enough error that you could throw an election. 1 in 100 could easily throw an election, because a 1% error would be a 2% difference between two candidates. Well, many of the voting machines, you can look at the Secretary of State's website, they're testing ballot batches, you know, on 20 ballots, 40 ballots. An error, there'll be 0.5% of 1%. The odds of it showing up would be like 1 in 5 or 1 in 10 on those. You'd take 10 years of testing before it even show up once if it tested every year. So the simple and absolute fact with an electronic ballot is an error in recording can never be recovered from. Any system we use has to have a backup, has to have complete reproducibility. As far as people talk about hacking and so forth...
I'm sorry, you don't see the verified paper audit trail as being that backup?
Absolutely not.
On electronic paper.
There's one study recently showed there's a 10% 10% of the VVPATs in Ohio did not match the electronic total.
Can you reference that study for me?
Yes, absolutely. I'll have to give it to you. I'll email it to you.
Okay.
As far as hacking and so forth, well, any competent program, I'm not really that concerned about a lot of the hacking. It can happen. But any competent programmer can program years in advance certain things that I could throw the election, you know, in a few years.
Now, would you be opposed as well to, so you're advocating hand ballot, would you also be opposed to optical scan on counting those hand ballots?
Has many of the same problems. But there are ways, the thing is, I propose something very much like double entry bookkeeping, where those ballots are counted twice. Could be one time electronically, one time by hand. And they are compared, they're zeroed out, just like business does every day. Also, one should be aware of the programmer of one of the major voting machine manufacturers has many counts of felony fraud for programming backdoors into ATM machines. So are there alternatives? Absolutely. They're used in other countries. They're getting accurate results at counting speeds that are faster than what we're getting. We can use technology for access. We can use technology to create a paper ballot. That ballot can be counted many ways, with micrometers, hand counting, mechanical counting devices such as money counters. So we can guarantee access, use technology where it's appropriate. But we need discrete paper ballots, the official record of the election. The ballots must be counted. But they can be created in various ways. They can be created by computers. And you'll find, actually, if you use the micrometer method of counting, that is the fastest way of all. It's just amazing, and it shows accuracy. But small batch counting, it's done all around the world. It's kind of interesting to note how people aren't copying a medical system. Well, in many ways, people aren't copying our medical system in different countries. They're also not copying our voting system. But we can have our cake and eat it, too. We can make with technology used appropriately, we can have an accurate, accessible, fast, and less expensive system. But, you know, all along in this, and you already have some of my comments in writing there from another meeting, we've never looked at the basic philosophy of what a good voting system needs to be. And we need to keep all those things in mind whenever we consider one system. But in conclusion, I have absolutely no trust for DREs. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Brent, is it Bachon, if I'm saying that right?
Bachon, yes.
Okay. From National Federation of the Blind.
Thank you, and I'm president of the NFB of Denver, and
I just want to thank you for really looking at this issue of election reform. And as Mrs. McGeorge said earlier, we're not really concerned of whether it's electronic at the polling place or mail-in ballot, whichever it is. We want independent, secretive ballot, just like everybody else under the Constitution. One of our members, when he turned 18, went to vote in his first presidential election. And he voted for one party or the other, and the person that he worked with said, "Are you sure? I want you to think about this. Are you really sure that's who you want to vote for?" And the whole process of that ballot went that way. And in 2006, he went to vote secretly, independently, and he was excited about voting again. And that's what we really want people to be, is excited about voting. We don't want that mistrust. We want accurate counting, but we want secret access and independent access to voting. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Neil McBurnett from the Coloradans for Voting Integrity.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk here. I've got a master's in computer science and work actually with some of the NIST folks that are developing the national standards. I co-chair a conference on computer security. And I've also worked in the trenches as a judge and as an auditor. In 2004 in Boulder, we found a problem with the HART machine system implementation when we did an audit. One of the votes had been miscounted, and unfortunately we never found out how many more had been miscounted in that election. In 2003, the citizens were way ahead in Boulder County and elsewhere in the country in demanding paper ballot systems. Finally, the national scene has caught up, and NIST itself calls for the decertification of paperless electronic voting, DRE machines. And they make the point that you need a system that is software independent. You must be able to verify everything in the election without relying on software. And that's a very important point. And so they say you need a VVPAT, like we were saying years ago. But it goes further than that. It's not just the VVPAT. You also need to look at all the other computers used in the system. And in particular, you need to look at the tally system, which is exactly the point that some of my colleagues made. So I want to focus mostly on that aspect of the issue, an audit that would be able to detect errors elsewhere in the system, errors with optical scan systems, error with central tally systems. There's usually only one person sitting in front of a computer when the final tally is done. And no one ever checks all the intermediate results. And in fact, I don't know of any system in Colorado that can even produce a report that can be audited. Let's think about how this works. We produce precinct reports now. There's a big grid of who voted for who in which precinct. That's worthless from an auditing perspective because most of the vote comes in early or absentee. That's all jumbled together. And if you want to find out how many people voted for Romer for governor in precinct 313, you have to go through 100,000 pieces of paper to find all the folks who voted in precinct 313 for Romer. That's a concept that hardly ever gets across in these things, but it's really important. We can't find the paper to audit the results that we print today. So we need to require the systems to produce an auditable report that comes up with how many votes for Romer were there in this batch of paper, in the absentee ballots that came in on the 4th of December, in that particular precinct DRE machine. You need to have a different kind of report so that you can do the audits. You also need to actually do audits. The current practice in Colorado is distressing because it's moving backwards from where we were years ago in Boulder County doing audits. We don't do audits anymore. The law doesn't require the law requires audits. I got that into the law working with Senator Gordon, but the rule doesn't. The rule says recount a select portion of the ballots. That's worthless. You know, if you're going to hack the election, you're going to say, well, you know, make sure that the result is right when it's the audit portion, but go ahead and fudge it the way I want it when we're talking about the reported results. So we need to audit the reported results, and we need to have a report that allows that to happen. In terms of security, I worked as a judge in Boulder this year, both the precinct and both the primary and the major election. There was a requirement to seal the machines, which was a really helpful thing. Thankfully, the judge actually looked at what was going on and said, this is totally inadequate. But the machine that I had overnight in my garage, a Hart Eastlake machine, had a big computer port still available to be plugged into, and I'm just guessing, I haven't gotten responses to my inquiries, that you can provide both power and computer input to that port, and I would be very suspicious that there might be a bug somewhere in the code that would allow you to hack those machines.
I'm sorry, why did you have the...
I was an election judge. They give us the machines. I was to take home overnight because we bring them to the polls in the morning. Hmm. All above board. This is exactly what I was supposed to do. But I noticed that there was tape sealing all the ways that you could open all the different equipment up and boxes sealed, but the big suitcase-looking eSlate device from Hart has a computer port on the back of it that provides power and computer cabling. And it's like, well, why didn't you seal that? You know, it's...
I think part of the problem might be the procedure that they let people take the machines home with them.
We're all concerned about that, too. You know, I'm trying to be a good guy. And
it's not exactly a high-tech problem, but go ahead, please.
Well, no, it is a high-tech problem because the machines are big and bulky, and it would cost a lot of money to deliver them ahead of time and spend money overnight. The ballots are something that is much easier to secure. I agree that there are issues with ballots too, but they're much harder to have a wholesale hacking system on paper because you got to actually get to all the paper. It's much easier to change the software code in a machine and say, on the election, report it the way I want it. Make it hard to find via the inadequate audits that Colorado currently has, and make sure that you know, it only happens rarely enough that we won't get caught. And especially in this final tally system, no one is auditing the place where the totals are added up, and no one has a way to verify those totals.
So if I understand it, that you're opposed to electronic voting, you want to go with paper ballots. Is that correct?
I think it's very important, I am delighted to see the disabilities community show up and say we want an independent way to vote. So we need electronic aids to voting, but I would use a ballot marking device. I think NIST likes ballot marking devices better. You produce a ballot, and then we can have standard technology that will, again, in an independent way, let people verify their vote, and in an auditable way. So. Okay. It's that set of things that we haven't gotten together yet. And there's always the comparisons to ATM machines. It's a lot easier to audit an ATM machine because you have receipts with people's names on them, and the bank knows how much money people put in and take out. Much easier to audit than a voting system where the best minds around are coming up with ways to try to do that right. So to summarize, we need to require that voting systems produce auditable reports of batches that you can link to paper and go back and independently check the way the report was actually generated. We need to mandate and spell out a comprehensive public audit process, like the Brennan Center requires, of the final tally as well as of the individual machines. And we should use ballot markers, not DREs.
Thank Neil, thank you so much for your testimony today and for not hacking into that computer you had overnight. Thank you for doing that. Or not doing that. Larry Lackland.
I'd like to switch my
Okay, Andrew Myers.
My name is Andrew Myers. I'm an attorney with Wheeler Trigg Kennedy, a law firm here in town. We represented the plaintiffs in the lawsuit over the past summer, the Conroy against Dennis lawsuit. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Secretary, for allowing me to speak today and for addressing this issue in a serious and studious manner. I'm here today primarily to submit a recent report by Mr. Noel Runyon. The report is titled Improving Access to Voting. It's available on the internet at voteraction.org. I'll submit it to yourself, Mr. Secretary, today in paper form. I think many people in the room are familiar with Mr. Runyon, but for people who are not, Mr. Runyon is an expert computer scientist with decades of experience in designing, implementing, and also using technologies for disability interface with technology. The important thing about Mr. Runyon's report, I should step back. Mr. Runyon's report contains a lot of excellent information concerning disability issues and technology issues to do with DREs and with all other available voting systems. The important conclusion of Mr. Runyon's report, however, is that DRE machines are not accessible and they do not comply currently with HAVA.
I'm sorry, accessible?
They're not accessible to disabled persons.
Okay, I think we've had quite a bit of, maybe I misunderstood the testimony we had today, but it seemed to be testimony to the contrary by members of the disabled community that they like DREs.
Right. That's true, Mr. Secretary. They are accessible to persons with certain disabilities. They are not fully accessible to all disabilities, and they do not comply with all of the requirements of HAVA.
Is there a machine that you would advocate that is accessible to persons with all disabilities?
Mr. Runyon would advocate, and I would urge the state to follow this Mr. Runyon's recommendations. He would recommend a blended version, much like what you've heard about several times today, a blended version of paper ballots in combination with auto marking machines that are accessible to disabled persons. But I'd like to step back and say that the important thing about this conclusion that Mr. Runyon reaches is that it shows that the whole premise of why we reached DREs was false. That we said we need to get DREs to comply with HAVA, and now we have DREs that don't comply with HAVA. And so the question we're left with is, why do we have DREs in the first place? And I think the ultimate answer is there's not a good reason why we do. For that reason, I would urge the state to follow Mr. Runyon's recommendations of a blended system with paper ballots and auto marking systems. I would also like to emphasize one other point, which is that an essential problem that we have with this system, an essential element of any system, would be to not have portions of our voting system shrouded behind claims of proprietary information. That is, there needs to be transparency. I believe Mr. Runyon is available to make comments now, so I would commend any questions you have to him. Thank you, Mr. Secretary.
Thank you very much. Mr. Runyon? Thank you.
Mr. Secretary, my name is Kerry Lachlan. I have Mr. Runyon on speakerphone in California, and I would like to put him on the line now if you have questions for him about his report, which I've just submitted to you. His report, Improving Access to Voting, one of the important things about Mr. Runyon that wasn't mentioned before is he's legally blind. So he's an advocate for disabled access and verifiable and independent voting. He was a witness, an expert witness, in the Conway lawsuit, and we've submitted his affidavit to the panel for your consideration. This report came out yesterday, and Mr. Runyon has a national news conference scheduled at 10 o'clock, and so we would invite Mr. Secretary for you to address Mr. Runyon himself and allow him to address briefly and within his time period his report to you. Would you be willing to do that?
Absolutely. Time is of the essence, and
okay.
We are going to adjourn the hearing at noon. irrespective of if there are people left to speak. So I just appreciation to others, I'd okay. want to move forward.
Mr. Runyon, we're on the record in the Secretary of State's office, and Secretary Kaufman has agreed to take your comments. Can you speak loudly so we can put you on the mic?
I will try.
Okay.
Is this loud enough?
Go ahead. That'll work.
You want me to go ahead?
Yes. Proceed.
Okay. My name is Noel Runyon. I'm an access technology engineer, and for a number of years now, I've been studying the access technology features of electronic voting systems. I got very involved in this when I had to actually start voting on them, and I had been really excited because I was looking forward to being able to cast my vote independently, privately. I thought the electronic machines sounded like they should be good, promised by the vendors to be very reliable and also private. So I eagerly look forward to trying it out. When I got to the polling place and after 45 minutes, the poll workers had to give up and tell me no, they couldn't get it to work even with tech support help, and I had to have somebody else to do my vote for me. I thought that was, you know, really, I was disappointed because of that, but more so, it worried me about the design of the system. And over the next four elections after that, for a total of five elections that I voted on these systems, these happened to be the Sequoia Edge 2 DRE systems used in Santa Clara, we have found that out of only two of those times I voted, were the election officials and the poll workers able to actually get the machine working properly in the audio mode by themselves. Two of the times were only because either I or my wife, who is a computer scientist, managed to tell them how to do it. In one case, my wife had to take the manual away from them and read it herself to explain to them what was the proper procedure. And so I got very concerned that if these things were that poorly designed and were that complex and complicated for the poll workers, and seemed to be very complicated for the users, I wondered whether a lot of other people were getting disenfranchised. So I started doing a lot of research on this, including testing other machines at the National Federation for the Blind Center in Baltimore, where I tested a lot of different machines. And I found that in all the cases, these machines were very, very poorly designed, not only for the access technology, but the rest of the elements, including the security. And I've been involved in working with several different proposals around the country to try to improve the access technology. And rather than getting on the side of the fence that says that we have to have access or security, I found that there really are many designs of systems and including current systems that can be used to match together both accessibility and security of the systems. And it's pretty inherent in the design of the systems that we have to be able to use a paper record for being able to get the software independence for security reasons. And that means that we have to have something in the way of a durable paper trail, a paper record. Not something like flimsy VDPAD rule printers, but a durable paper record. My concern is that right now this really mounting is that a lot of counties and vendors will respond by just putting printers on their DRE voting machines and saying, well, that gives us the verifiability that we need for security. And for several different reasons, that's not adequate for accessibility for disabled folks. That we don't want to take away disability for disabled folks. We really want to, if anything, add that, or not, if anything, we definitely want to improve the accessibility so a lot more people can use these machines, like people with severe motor impairments. And right now, the best model is to use ballot marking devices, such as the AutoMark represents, allow us to mark our ballots and then accessibly verify what's on those ballots, to read them back. And there are other manufacturers making ballot marking devices. What I don't want to see is just vendors throw a printer on and say, well, we have a durable cut sheet printer, and we'll call that verifiable. Because if we don't have scanning technology built onto that to read it back at the actual print. Okay.
Mr. Runyon, if I could ask you a quick question.
Yeah, really.
Mr. Runyon, could we?
And we don't want to let the disabilities folks down by taking away accessibility. There are several security reasons why you really don't want them to be using systems that can't be verified, because those are kind of things that a mendacious program can actually cheat more on their voting.
Mr. Runyon, can Secretary Kaufman interrupt you just briefly?
Certainly.
And Mr. Runyon, you said that there were many acceptable designs, but is it my understanding that what you're advocating is a paper ballot with the automark system?
Well, I don't want to be in the position of recommending one particular vendor as the only solution. My proposals, as listed in my paper that I think has been presented to you guys as part of my testimony, are that there are a number of different systems, and in particular using blended systems. I don't believe in any perfect machine. There is not and will not be one perfect voting machine that will meet everybody's needs for, you know, multilingual and disabilities, handicaps, and their voting needs. There have to be, I think, blended systems, where a blended system is a mix, say, of optical scanning, paper ballots, and some forms of ballot marking devices, and maybe even also bilingual ballots to accommodate a wider spectrum of people. Okay. The AutoMark is a current technology that really works pretty well, especially if people consider using and require using the privacy sleeves that allow you to vote independently during the marking and the vote selection, where you need privacy and independence, and then not need as much privacy for before that process or after it when you're casting a ballot. There are other systems. The Populex system is a ballot marking system.
What system is that?
Could you repeat the name of that ballot?
Be able to verify printed on their ballot.
Okay. Well, Mr. Ryan, I will be able to. That is in his testimony?
It is.
Okay. That's fine.
I'm sorry, sir. I can barely hear you.
Okay. What was the name of that last system you mentioned?
Oh, that is the Populex, Populex.
Okay, I think we're out of time. Thank you very much, Mr. Runyon.
Thank you, Mr. Runyon.
Mr. Secretary, I'd just like to supplement Mr. Runyon's comments with the news release that I submitted to as part of our packet. New Mexico, which has a law that requires verifiable paper ballots, has now certified the AutoMark machine. And we believe that AutoMark was improperly not certified in Colorado due to political considerations of the prior Secretary of State. And we believe that you should invite AutoMark to resubmit a certification process in Colorado, because in the news release from New Mexico, it says, the Albuquerque Journal notes that the certification in New Mexico was certain to please disability advocacy organizations who picked the AutoMark as their overwhelming favorite in tests earlier this year. Secretary of State Virgil Hrón said the decision about which machines to buy would be left to the individual county clerks. But so far, the only machine that complies with the state's VPAP requirement is the AutoMark. Mm-hmm. And we believe that AutoMark in a blended system. I'm from Boulder County. Mm-hmm. I know Josh Liss, the county clerk, is here from Boulder County. We have a blended hybrid, what I call the hybrid system, which the voter, as they enter the poll or the voting early voting center, has a choice to go to the paper line or the DRE line.
And that's acceptable to your organization?
Yes.
Okay.
So we would submit those two reports. We've also submitted a report from Vote Trust, Voter Unite, and Voter Action regarding the e-voting failures in the 2006 midterm election. And we would ask the Secretary's office to note the number of problems in multiple counties in basically every state with the e-voting process. And I think that eventually, I think what's trying to be set up here is some kind of conflict between the disabled community and the voting reform community. And I think that's a false conflict. I think we have a joint goal, and that's for verifiable, fair, and secure elections. And I believe that the market will decide which is the best machine to supplement a paper ballot system. I believe that there should be some type of system, whether it be Automark or Hart or Sequoia or Diebold or whoever the market chooses. And I think that eventually counties will migrate towards the best machine.
If your position is that DREs simply are not secure, not a secure method of voting, then how could you advocate a blended system that would, in effect, compromise what you're advocating?
I think Automark can be the system, not a DRE, but a...
Yeah, because I think, I must have misinterpreted you, because I thought you approved of the Boulder system where they had, you could vote DRE or you could vote paper.
Well, Boulder uses the Hart machine, and I'm not an advocate for Hart or Diebold or Sequoia. My personal opinion is that we should migrate towards an Automark system.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for your testimony. Nancy Doty, County Clerk and Recorder from Arapahoe County.
Good morning, Mr. Secretary. I'd like to address security, first of all. I think that we need to look at the entire process. In Arapahoe County, I feel our security is very good. We have, at our warehouse, where all of the equipment is maintained, video cameras. We have coded access cards that's limited to certain individuals. We can also then run audit reports to tell when they've entered the various areas. Some have access to the entire warehouse, very, very few. Others have limited access to a particular area. So we can run audit reports and find that out. Then we have video cameras that we can see what they were doing. We have paper logs where individuals have to sign in and out. In addition, we have seals on the machines that election judges verify on when we open the polls on election day that they have not been tampered with. And if they should have been, if there was evidence of any tampering, then we would not use that machine that day. Arapahoe County voters overwhelmingly loved our DR machines this past election. We've successfully used DREs for nearly 20 years in Arapahoe County. We have not had an incident that has caused us concern with tampering of the machines. There are many checks and balances in place to determine, to note that the votes are accurate. We reconcile to the number of voters who have come into the polling site and to the number of votes cast. There are many checks and balances in place, and they're just too numerous to even go into detail this morning. This morning, I've heard a lot of talk about doing manual counts, and I would like to address that. I believe it would be impossible to do a manual count of ballots and get the same number twice. I would like to suggest, in Arapahoe County, in the 04 election, we had 235,000 ballots cast. It would take months to count those ballots by hand. I would like to suggest that the advocates of using a hand tally of ballots participate in a test of manually counting ballots. And Arapahoe County would be very open to providing the number of ballots that you would choose to be counted by hand. I would suggest 1,000 for a good start, or whatever number you want, and then manually count the ballots and document the results and the problems that were incurred during that process. So anyone that would like to participate in that process, I would encourage them to do so. I've offered this before. No one has ever taken me up on it. Okay? And you can too, Mike.
Thank you, Nancy Doty, County Clerk and Recorder from Arapahoe County. Carol Tone, if I've got that right? Okay. Bonnie Clark?
I also will submit written comments on behalf of League of Women Voters of Denver.
And, could you please come to the microphone if you're...
I'm the voter service chair for the League of Women Voters of Denver, and we will be giving you some written comments. I'm going to include in that packet a number of reports, some of which you probably already have in front of you, but we just noted down quickly the things that have been really seminal for us as we've been studying this issue. The National League policy now is that there must be a paper record of the vote. And we started with the General Accountability Office report. We read David Wagner's testimony. The Brennan Center report on security of elections is extremely important. And the new NIST study on software independence is also very useful. I'm assuming that you or your staff are familiar with these, but we're going to send them along just in case there's something that hasn't gotten into your packet before. Thanks.
Oh, just one question, if I could. What is your position on, or the league's position on the VPAT, verifiable
in audit trail? Well, it doesn't fit our national position because the paper audit trail is not the vote. It's an auxiliary that allows you to test the tally of the vote.
Okay. So you would be, does the league have a position that's parallel to some of the other people here where it's paper ballots and, what do you just
say? Yeah, we do not have a position in terms of a specific system. Our criteria are that it must be secure, accurate, recountable, and accessible. And then that there should be paper that is the official record of the vote, that is the ballot.
Okay. Thank you very much. Sharon Klein, City and County of Denver, not here. George McDowith, National Federation of the Blind.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary, for allowing me to speak. I'm George McDermott. I'm the Colorado Springs Chapter President of our local National Federation of the Blind. And I was just wanting to speak, as my fellow colleagues have stated, I have no personal position per se on the method of acquiring an accessible ballot. However, I should say that an independent and secret ballot is of the utmost importance. I've had the opportunity to vote for in several different elections. I'm a voting fiend. I'm a political science major, and I've always taken great delight in voting. And up until 2006, I've always had to vote with the assistance of someone. Usually it's a trusted individual. I spent several years voting with my mom, whose political positions differ strongly from my own. So there was always the question in the back of my head as to whether or not she was really putting down the vote that I desired. And then I got married, and my wife's positions and my positions differ significantly. So there was always a question in my mind as to whether or not she was going to put down what I desired. A example of being influenced while in the voting booth comes from my beautiful wife, who was assisting me in filling out a local election ballot, not this past April, but the April before. And we were voting on two rather controversial issues. And I voted one way on one issue and wanted to vote another way on the other. And she said, "Are you sure you want to do that?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And she said, "Do you realize that if you do that, you will be paying for it because of X, Y, and Z?" And I said, "Oh, well then, I'll have to vote the other way." And so I think even with the most benign and pleasant of intentions, I feel that the most trusting of people can potentially have a very negative impact on how one wishes to vote. I'd like to speak just briefly to the concerns involved with voting with the use of the electronic machines. When I voted in 2006, I had to wait for 45 minutes also for the machine to work. And I view it not so much as an issue with the machines, but with the training and education of the voting officials. I feel that with appropriate training, the issues that are found in the use of the electronic voting machines can be eliminated over the course of time. I feel that probably the primary reason why there was such a wait was the fact that it's a new machine, a new system, and so subsequently the voting officials were not properly trained. Hmm. Thank you very much.
George, thank you very much for your testimony today. Stephanie O'Malley? Okay. Gary, if I can say, Vandy Stowe, did I say that right? Okay. With Jefferson County Clerk and Recorder's Office? Okay.
Yes, sir. My name is Gary Vandy Stowe. I'm the Deputy Director, I'm not Deputy Director anymore. I'm the Director, Technical Director for Jefferson County Clerk and Recorder's Office. I'm also the person who has personally been involved in the counting of every election in Jefferson County since 1994, as well as in 2000, I was the Deputy Director of Elections for Jefferson County. By way of training and background, I have a bachelor's science degree in computer science. I've worked as a professional programmer, continue to do so. I'd like to introduce myself as a professional programmer who actually supports VREs. So just in case the gentleman who mentioned he'd never actually met one, I'll be his first. I hadn't really set down any specific things I wanted to talk about, but as I listened today, what I came away with was what I consider misconceptions and misinformation. Several of the speakers put down several things that were quite distressing and very vague without giving actual details. For instance, Mr. I think Hardy Branscombe noted that the hand count was the, as he said, the best of both worlds. Let me address the hand count issue. Jefferson County has 350,000 registered voters. Of that number, about half of them vote on paper by absentee. Since 2002, we've also had 1,842 DREs in the polling places. These DREs are completely independent of each other. And all have to be handled separately. The hand count issue, since I'm the person who personally runs the central count machines and stands there for approximately a week or so, loading those in at, say, 300 ballots per minute, I have never seen a hand count that has come out correctly and shown that the machine count was incorrect. I have, without fail, always produced a machine count, had it verified by a hand count, a selection, and it was always the hand count that was off. And this isn't just one person hand counting. This is usually a team of three people. And it may take three or four times before they finally come up with the issue. The problem with hand count is, first of all, Jefferson County, you're talking 150,000 ballots. I don't know if you know what 150,000 ballots looks like, but it's no small feat. It's 6 feet high, say 10 feet long in boxes, and about 4 to 8 feet wide. To say you can break those down into small batches and count them accurately, I'm just going to have to go with the same challenge. Our 2004 ballots should now be available from the storage point of view. And you know, I would encourage any people who believe that hand counting is much more accurate than machine counting to come to the county. I'll provide 100,000 ballots, and I will run one machine, and I will see what kind of issues we run into, and I will guarantee that there are so many problems with hand counting, so many problems, and that comes from years of experience of watching small batches, 25 ballots trying to be counted. The issues are precincts. We have 324 precincts. We'll say we have 40 ballot styles, which means among those precincts we have 324 different piles, but now you've got different versions of those 324 different piles. So you may have 500, 600, 700 different ballot faces. So to say a hand count is the way to go, what you would have to do is have a column of, say, 700 different tally sheets that would fit that particular ballot. You'd have to match that tally sheet up to the ballot and say, okay, this is what we're tallying. There's not the same thing. If you have one or two questions on a ballot, not difficult. If you're talking 20, 30 questions on the ballot and all kinds of different combinations, you've got overvotes, you've got undervotes, you've got all kinds of different situations, those will throw experienced people who have been hand counting and looking at these ballots for years. It's fraught with huge amount of error. Also from Harvey, he said, you know, touchscreens are not ideal. Now that's something that I've heard repeated over and over here. Not ideal. Well, I think the point that we have here is there is no ideal. I have not found a machine that is ideal. I've run elections and counted punch cards. Punch cards were not ideal. They were fast, fairly accurate. I've never run into any issues. If they were handled well, that they were going to be off significantly. But they will be off significantly if they are not handled properly, as they were not in different counties. I also heard an interesting thing, that the voter isn't likely to verify the screen, or is likely to verify the screen, not the VPAT. Well, I voted for the first time. I usually would vote absentee. I went to Douglas County, even though I work in Jefferson County, just to vote on the touchscreen, because I wanted to see exactly, I want to be able to say, I've done it. I trust it. And as a first-time voter on a different machine, because they have different system, I had no problem telling that was the VPAT. It had instructions. It said, here, look at this. Read this. I wasn't confused that this paper was what I'm supposed to be ignoring and look at the screen, just because it's brighter. I think that's insulting to voters to say that they're not bright enough to see the paper. I believe it was Claudia Coons who mentioned that DREs are proven inaccurate. I guess I'm not sure exactly where that comes from. I've never seen it proven that they are inaccurate. In fact, every time I've tested a DRE, it has always matched with what the paper record said or the audit record said, every time. And then it really caught me by surprise, because I have been there the whole time. She also mentioned that there were known issues of vote flipping in Jefferson County, which is amazing to me, because to my knowledge, and I've been there, we haven't had vote flipping going on. In fact, I've never seen vote flipping happen on these machines. And I think by far we have the most machines, and we have the most experience with these machines. And to say this has happened in Jefferson County, and I've been unaware of it, is just absolutely amazing. I guess I'd like to see the hard evidence on that one, and why Jefferson County was brought to our attention. I also heard another wonderful thing, that these machines can be hacked years in advance, which is an incredible claim because we don't know who's on the ballot. I'm not sure exactly how you would know that, say, Harvey Wallbanger is going to be in position number 32 on the ES&S machine in Jefferson County on a particular date well into the future when we don't know if Harvey Wallbanger is going to be alive at that point. I don't know how you hack years in advance without knowing who's on the ballot. So that one just really struck me as an interesting one. I also heard that no one checks the intermediate reports. There's one guy, I believe it was said, there's one guy who sits in front of the computer and just spits out the final total. That's completely false. I'm the guy who sits in front of the computer and spits out the total, but you know what? After that, there are probably thousands of man hours that go in to say, let's balance what we have with the poll books with how many voters we have to how many votes we have for that location. That is part of the auditing process. That is part of the process that's required by the Secretary of State's office, and it is absolutely necessary. In my own county, I made a mistake, and electronically at the tabulation side of things, I put a batch of votes from a particular location into a subdirectory that our system did not recognize. What happened is, as part of our auditing process, we said, hold it, we're not matching here. What's going on? So what I did is I needed to go back, identify which machines those were, identify where the mistake was made, and we found those, put them back where they were supposed to be, and that was purely human error. Again, the machines had done it correctly. I just fat-fingered a particular directory, and it was that easy to miss that. But it's the double-checking afterwards that is really the important part. And that's what we do. And finally, another, I've got a few other here, but I'll just...
We're out there limited.
Yes. The last one. I heard the comment that it is easier, or no, it's harder to hack paper, which is amazing because you've got hundreds of thousands of very capable, fully trained press operators out there in the country who can print these ballots. A ballot is really nothing terribly special. It's got certain things in certain positions, but it doesn't mean that can't be hacked and run through and hundreds of thousands of ballots be introduced that are erroneous. Whereas with my 1,800 machines, I've got them all on camera, I've got them locked down, I've got security on those, I've got seals on those, and you would have to go individually the day of the election and touch every single one of those while the election is going on in order to hack those machines. And somehow you're going to do this after you've checked in as a voter, verified your ID, and then go up there and then tamper with the equipment. I don't see that that's actually a feasible thing because the machines, as we use them, do not even know anything about the election except for a security code prior to the opening of those machines by the poll workers on election day. After they're closed, nothing can be done with them. We've got audits that come back in multiple forms, and those are the audits that we check and verify that we can balance those to paper. I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. All right. Okay, I'm struggling with this name, but it's Coloradans for Voting Integrity. Who is speaking on the... Yes, I'm sorry, is it Margaret?
Margaret Johansson.
Johansson, very good. Thank you.
That's a group, right?
Yes.
I don't have to say very much because Carrie Lackland covered a lot of what there was. But there's been, since I've been interested in this area, I've been amazed at how much misinformation is out there. A great unwillingness to consider what computer professionals have to say. And a lot of, I think that the Secretary of State's office did do Automark an injustice last year, maybe because of misinformation that they had. I mean, one thing that they were telling people, I know at least three instances, was that you had to have a DRE for the accessible vote. That's not what TAVA says. And I asked one person who's no longer with the office, that's not what the federal law says, is it? And he said, well, it's what the state law says. So I checked the state law, and it's not what the state law says. So there's this myth out there, which people have referred to. But it's an example of a lot of misinformation. And it may be because DRE companies want to keep their business. I don't know why, but so I am very excited about the Noel Runyon report. It's independent of financial stakes. It's thoughtful. He's a real expert, and he has a very interesting, thoughtful discussion of independence, which has been a big issue. So I'd say pages 18 through 20, really read that carefully because it's good stuff. And it has been a great worry of mine about, you know, this misinformation and so forth. I was disturbed to find out how much your election officials, professional organizations are funded by the vendors. I went to one and, you know, all the lunches and special events are paid for. And that seems to be just a surface indicator of something that we should really think about. How much independent, honest information are you getting from good scientific studies? And how much are you getting that maybe propaganda, where the basic intent is not to support what voters need, which is honest elections. Thank you.
Margaret, thank you so much. Andy Bardwell.
Thank you for having this hearing and for letting me speak. I have a PhD in mathematical statistics and routinely testify on sampling theory and sample design. And I primarily want to talk about the importance of auditing and doing auditing correctly if we're going to do it. I think that ideally it would be nice to have a voting system that was reliable enough and had enough credibility that people didn't feel that it was necessary to audit it. But I have all the material I've read indicates that people who study the issue feel that we need to audit our electoral results because we don't have that confidence in them. The problem with the auditing methods that are being proposed locally and nationally is they advocate a fixed percentage, 1-5% usually, of the, typically now with DREs, it's of vote counting devices, and they're advocating 100% hand recount of a fixed percent of those devices. In Colorado, we have another wrinkle, which is very unfortunate, that the law only requires that two elections be counted in the, on those devices. Statistically, that type of an audit is worse than no audit because it's going to give us the impression that we're verifying the electoral results when we're not. That an audit of that nature can, in many elections, would give far less than a 50% chance of catching electoral fraud if there were significant fraud significant enough to change the outcome of the election. So I would advocate very strongly that we terminate doing audits, give up the ruse, and just let people know that we have unsecured elections. If we're going to do audits, let's do them correctly. And it's easy to do them correctly. There are different auditing methods that I could...
Give me one example of what would you consider a correct auditing method.
Well, there's three methods that I've seen proposed, and I could propose others, but there's no need. We don't need variety. We just need a right method. The most common one that's being talked about is expanding that type of audit that I just described, a 100% hand recount of a random selection of vote counting machines, expand that to a high enough percentage that would actually give you adequate confidence of the electoral outcome.
What would a higher percentage be?
So the higher percentage depends on, and I'm not advocating this method, and I can say why, but per se, I think this would be a better better than what we have. The percentage depends on how many vote counting devices are involved in a given election, what the margin is in the election, and and the number of votes counted in those vote counting devices.
100,000 votes cast with, let's say, a difference of two percentage points between two candidates.
The
49 to 51.
Yeah, the one of the problems.
What would you have? What would be?
I'm answering your question, okay. But I can't tell you with 100,000 votes cast. It isn't dependent on that. It's dependent on the number of machines. Let's say there's 440 machines with 2%. At that level, I got a spreadsheet I could tell you
okay.
in a second.
I understand.
I'd like to give you the spreadsheet, actually.
Sure, please.
It's produced by a national group. There's actually several spreadsheets. That 5% might be adequate or it might be more.
Okay.
In elections that have a narrow margin, say less than 1%, it's often necessary to audit over 50%, up to close to 100% of the machines. That's particularly true if the number of machines is small. So it's possible to construct audits that would be reliable under those circumstances, but you have to also take into account the fact that many elections are being counted on the same machine and so forth, and you have to design have a sample design that would cover adequately each of those elections. What we have in Colorado now, where you only count two elections of those that are recorded on the machine, that automatically, let's say there's 10 elections on the machine and you're only counting two, that automatically cuts your confidence of identifying fraud, if there were fraud, by a fifth. So when we might have had, say, 50% chance of identifying fraud, which is not adequate, I mean, most people would say we need at least 95 to 99% confidence interval. That's a standard threshold in using statistics. We would be cutting that down by a fifth, so we'd have maybe a 10% chance of catching fraud. The other problem with the kind of audit we are doing now, that audit is intended to identify, the way it's calculated, when you calculate the probabilities, is to, what is the probability that we will find at least one machine that suffered from this fraud, if there were fraud that affected the outcome of the election? The other problem is enforcement. If we do find one machine, we can't just say, well, it was a problem they couldn't count, or let's, you know, whatever. It means that any evidence of fraud that's discovered in an audit of that sort has to result in an expanded audit and even possibly a recount. Otherwise, then we have no security. We say, well, we're going to design a method to find at least one instance of fraud if it occurred, and then when we find it, we don't respond to it. We've certainly gutted the efficacy of the audit in that case. There are a couple other methods that are being proposed for auditing that would be much more efficient, because obviously hand counting this many ballots is, we're talking about over 50% of all the ballots counted on these machines, so it's a substantial task. Mm-hmm. A couple other issues. I have done extensive analysis of historical records of elections for voting rights cases and in other litigation. All of those and all of the evidence people have collected independently across the country about vote fraud, and there's substantial evidence, that's part of the reason we're here, it is based on precinct-level data. And what there's been a movement lately to get rid of precinct-level reporting. And I would just have to say, as someone who is intimately familiar with this and really values our electoral system not being a black box, the only thing that keeps it from being a black box to the average citizen is precinct-level data. You can access this data. You can compare relatively fine-grained data to verify at least the plausibility of the electoral results, and you can do some pretty, you know, basic statistical analysis, just plotting results to see if there's gross evidence of fraud. If we only report vote center data or large aggregate data, that the black box becomes so huge, there's absolutely no way for a citizen to have any confidence, besides the fact that the result was reported, that those results were accurate. I would also like to suggest that if we're going to, whatever system we use, there's been a lot of talk here about, well, there is risk of tampering, there's not risk of tampering, and the Brennan Center is really the standard for this information, our analysis of what risks we're really faced with our electoral systems. And the basic tool they use is called a risk analysis. And that might sound abstract. It's not. It's basically people sitting down and saying, well, if I wanted to defraud the election, given I'm using DREs, what would I have to do? How many people would have to be involved? How many machines would have to be tampered with, and so forth? Using that kind of analysis, they have concluded that we are at risk. And that kind of analysis is easy to conduct. And I would just suggest to you, and this is something that could be accessible in your office, that anything that we do, that we subject it at least to this first level of analysis, you know, what are the paths to defrauding or making our electoral system vulnerable? And how can we be aware, mitigate those risks, and really control the risk that we face of having elections that aren't accurate.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Bagwell. Les Berkowitz, I believe last speaker signed up. Les Berkowitz.
Mr. Secretary, thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'll be brief, but I'm a lawyer. My educational background is political science, public administration, and law. My legal specialty is technology law. I teach cybersecurity law at the University of Denver. I've also done work with liability for defective software systems. I'm really not here to talk about any specific system or technology. I would like to comment on principles that should be used in analyzing how we proceed. Three in particular are important. I would call them monitoring, auditing, and transparency. Monitoring is a function of assuring through every step of the process that the software is functioning properly and has not been tampered with. We've had a lot of discussion today about various methods of doing that. One thing that's not been discussed is the concept of following the software through the entire route from creation at the vendor to installation and use in the field. Certainly, we should take the same level of care with voting software that we would take in dealing with a risky virus. By that, I mean biologic virus or nuclear software or Defense Department software. And I think instead we're looking at it more in the concept of software that's used in civilian lives. In this case, the monitoring issue for me boils down to protecting the legitimacy of the system. And if we can't assure the public of the basic foundation of the democracy whole system delegitimizes and fails. We should therefore be monitoring the people who handle the software, including reproduction of the software and so forth, after it's already been tested. Auditing has been discussed at length, but I think we need to keep in mind that there must be an independent way of cross-checking and verifying the results. There's been some discussion of the issue of proprietary rights in the software and difficulties in testing and so forth. And I would put that under the issue of transparency. The same issue arises certainly with the Defense Department in dealing with sophisticated software. There are many methods to protect the legal rights of vendors without prohibiting a detailed analysis and verification of the code. Software code is verified all the time by the U.S. government in a manner designed to protect the trade secret nature of the software. And finally, I think there's discussion between different parties about what level of fear to have about the risks associated. We heard discussion about using a threat model. We had one speaker comment about the fact that you can't tamper in the future because you don't know who the candidates are going to be. I would simply say that certainly paranoia is not useful. On the other hand, even paranoids have people after them. And the fact that you cannot tamper with a system in the future in order to designate a specific candidate does not mean it can't be tampered with in the future. Certainly we can affect the food supply in a manner to kill a lot of people without having a specific targeted person who we intend to kill. I think that we need to have the threat matrix concept relates not only to the nature of the threat, but the nature of the harm, and in this case, the harm is to the entire political system.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anybody else who would like to testify today at this public hearing? Seeing none, thank you all for coming. Meeting's adjourned. Oh, thanks. Thank you.
Input. I can show you the place on the back of the machine that is left open for.
No, I take your word for it.
Thanks for your patience.
Oh, well, thank you.
I'm glad I don't have your job.
Can I get your
email? Can I send you those? Really send you, I think. Can I tell you something? We spent a half an hour with the Kennedy Center Gordon the other day, and it for some reason, he's not all there statistically. So it took a half hour. Maybe you are, but if you. I'm usually available. If you call me, I could probably cut your time. If you get the idea.
Do you have a card?
You know, I don't. I'll just send you an email.
Just send me an email.
No, I was interested in your comments. And I am kind of curious that computer experts have been raising questions in the last 6 years. And then been ignored. Talking about ignoring the comments and decisions.
Yes. You would concur with that.
Are you saying you concur with that?
No, I do
fearful of the ability to protect the system.
Well, John Hickenlooper, the panel for was a software problem.
No, I'm primarily an attorney in private practice.
Oh, okay, I'm not a private
attorney. Okay, other than that, I'm in private practice. But I'm definitely not a state government. I'm just saying, because I'm a very radical
one. Sure, that is
where is it set up at?
Gary Vanderster, who spoke, who was the one who said, "How do you know it's Canada?"
Oh, yeah.
And him saying that.
Thank you so much for coming. Thank you for your testimony.
I really appreciate you, Steve Rob. Probably copy my copy of the report. Just very quick. Secondly, I will send you this to just so the address was in the email. Also, I'm doing a presentation. I'll send you a PDF of the system. I was going to send them on.
I could program
in the future.
Yeah. Very good.
Okay.